Jay Atkinson plays rugby. He's been doing it for decades, and in his new book, Memoirs of a Rugby-Playing Man, Guts, Glory, and Blood in the World's Greatest Game, he explores how rugby has helped form his identity, even as it has beaten him up. Jay Atkinson joins me now in the studio. Welcome back to Only a Game.
My pleasure, Bill. Really happy to be here with you.
You write that when you played your first rugby match, you were in college at the time, quote, "I had no idea that I was entering a new life." How and when did that realization come upon you?
I was sort of a jack-of-all-trades sports-wise. I had a little dalliance with junior A hockey. I mean, I sort of dated a lot of sports, and then I finally found the sport I wanted to settle down with, you know. And I kind of knew it instantly. I went to a couple practices, and the first time they gave me the ball, they said, you can kick the ball along the ground. Nobody can tackle you when the ball is on the ground, and then you can retrieve your own kick. So I just kicked it down the field into the end goal, ran down, jumped on it, and they said, you just scored. I said, I like this game. Kind of combined the things I was good at, which was sort of like devious little movements that nobody else was expecting.
Well, beyond the devious little movements, you maintain in the book that rugby gave you what you call a sense of authenticity. Why was that more true of rugby than, say, soccer or hockey or wrestling?
There's something about physical courage that's necessary to enter into a scrum, to be tackled without any equipment on, that somehow gets reaffirmed not only when you play in your first match, but when you go to your first after-match party. In hockey, you don't go out with the other team. You usually hate them, even after the game's over. But with rugby, both teams and the referee would be at the bar, and people that you are in bloodlust combat with an hour earlier would buy you a beer, put an arm around your shoulder, and ask you where you were from. And that made me want to travel to the 14 countries I eventually traveled to play the game.
Some of the more intriguing passages in this book, at least for me, are not about rugby. They're about your relationships with two writers, of whom our listeners may be aware, Harry Cruz down in Florida and Andre Dubas Jr. Neither of them played rugby, but you attribute to Cruz what you call the qualities of a rugby man. Why?
I knew him at the height of his powers. Like, I was at University of Florida in the early 80s, and he had just published 10 novels in 10 years. And as I say in the book, he had not done it quietly or humbly. So he had this sort of larger-than-life reputation as a brawler and as an outspoken guy on campus and in American literature generally. I remember him saying to class one night, someday some one of you may go off and write something really fine that demands an enormous amount of the reader and gives the reader back that much. Pause. But that ain't where we are tonight. And, you know, his ability to be completely candid in all situations and his sort of comic self-awareness, his loyalty, his insouciance among his peers, those are rugby qualities.
You and Harry Cruz nearly squared off at your first meeting, the first creative writing class you attended at Florida. Was this a matter of writers competing with each other or the influence of some leftover rugby adrenaline?
I had just come from rugby practice. I was a few minutes late. I was running to what was then called the GPA building, the English department at University of Florida. I saw Harry, who I didn't know was Harry. I thought he was a janitor. I said, hey, chief, can you direct me to fiction writing? And he grunted and pointed to the door. And I was like, oh, this guy's the professor. Uh-oh. And, but I already had, you know, I already had a black eye from rugby practice. My first practice, I got an elbow right in the face. I had a black eye. I had a lot of adrenaline because it was my first graduate school fiction writing class, and I was coming from the rugby pitch, and he gave out these instructions, and his accent was like he talked about as fast as a possum does arithmetic. I couldn't follow a word he was saying in that Georgia drawl, and then I raised my hand and said, excuse me, professor, I couldn't understand what you were saying because of your accent. And you could have heard, like, you know, a half a pin drop in that room. People were mortified that I challenged Harry Cruz on his accent, which was his whole identity, was his Bacon County, like, origins, which I didn't even know who the guy was. And he said, you know, I don't much like your accent either, and we can go outside and settle this right now. And I was coming from rugby practice. I thought, well, maybe this is part of the curriculum. University of Florida. You're expected to go out into industrial lit hallways and fight like dogs with your professor. Then the preeminent student, like, gets his degree.
You make a case in the book for rugby as a tremendously attractive sport for the players, maybe even addictive for the players, but as a spectator sport, not so much. Why has it not caught on here in this country as a spectator sport?
That's a really great question, Bill, because we're at a pivotal moment in American rugby. Rugby will be an Olympic sport in 2016. And the rugby that will be played in the Olympics and the rugby that's now being televised in the U.S. because there is a national television contract, I think it's with NBC, is seven-a-side rugby. And that sport will be a gateway sport to people to appreciate, I think, the finer points of rugby union where there's a full scrum and there's 15 men against 15 men. But over the next 3 years, you'll see a lot more rugby on television. You'll see a greater upward climb towards more acceptance, respectability, and recognition.
Jay Atkinson is the author of Memoirs of a Rugby Playing Man, Guts, Glory, and Blood in the World's Greatest Game. The book is published by St. Martin's Press. Jay, thank you very much for coming in.
My pleasure, Bill.
I am a rugby fan. I come from down your way, and I can play the Gauteng Lions.
It's 22 and a half minutes before the hour.
Support for Only a Game comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where the program is produced. Oliver Wyman, a global management consulting firm with 3,000 professionals serving global 1,000 companies. OliverWyman.com. And Trader Joe's, traveling the world to source a variety of foods and beverages like pizza from Italy and cheddar from Australia. Locations at TraderJoe's.com. This is NPR.